He doubted the company ever would, or if it did, it would be replaced. Its lady seemed the type not to turn loose of anything. He gave Sal a peck on the cheek. "Take care, and don't short yourself or the kids. If Lisa turns up, tell her she's fired. If Wally does, tell him I forgive him." He headed for the back door. The flash and roar on the slope continued. At one point, there was a howling which fluttered toward Durtile, but it broke up somewhere over the enclosure. He put his head down and his collar up and followed alleyways toward the waterfront. Only twice did he encounter patrols. Neither boasted a man who knew him. The first ignored him. The corporal commanding the second told him to get his ass off the street and went on. From Wharf Street he could see the Black Castle once more, through the masts and stays of countless ships. It seemed to have gotten the worst of the exchange, which had died away. Thick black smoke boiled out of the fortress, an oily column leaning a few degrees and rising thousands of feet, then spreading in a dark haze. On the slopes below the castle there was a twinkling and seething, an anthill-like suggestion of movement. He supposed the company was hurrying into action. The waterfront was in a frenzy. The channel boasted a dozen vessels heading out. Every other foreign ship was preparing to sail. The river itself seemed strangely disturbed and choppy. Shed tried three ships before he found one where money talked loudly enough to be heard. He paid 10 leva to a piratical purser and found himself a spot where he would not be seen from shore. Nevertheless, as the crew were casting off, the man called Pawnbroker came racing along the pier with a squad of soldiers, shouting at the ship's master to hold fast. The ship's master made an obscene gesture, told them where they could go, and began drifting with the current. There were too few tugs for the number of ships moving out. For his defiance, the skipper got an arrow through the throat. Astonished sailors and officers stood frozen, aghast. Arrows stormed aboard, killed more than a dozen men, including the mate and bosun. Shed cowered in his hiding place, gripped by a terror deeper than any he had known before. He had known they were hard men, men who did not play games. He had not realized just how hard they were, how savage they could be. The Duke's men would have thrown up their hands in despair and wandered away cursing. They would not have massacred anyone. The arrows kept coming, in a light patter, till the vessel was out of range. Only then did Shed peep out and watch the city dwindle slowly. Oh, slowly did it drift away. To his surprise, none of the sailors were angry with him. They were angry, true, but had not made a connection between the attack and their last-minute passenger. Safe, he thought, elated. That lasted till he began to wonder where he was bound and what he would do once he got there. A sailor called, "Sir, they're coming after us in a launch." Shed's heart dropped to his ankles. He looked and saw a small ship pulling out, trying to put on sail. Men in black company uniform abused the crew, hurrying them. He got back into hiding. After the mauling these men had taken, there was no doubt they would surrender him rather than suffer more, if they realized he was what Pawnbroker wanted. How had the man picked up his trail? Sorcery, of course, had to be. Did that mean they could find him anywhere?
Chapter 35. Juniper. Bad news. The fuss was over. It had been a dramatic display while it lasted, though not as impressive as some I've seen. The battle on the Stair of Tyr, the fighting around Charm. This was all flash and show, more rattling to Juniper's people than to us or the denizens of the Black Castle. They did us no harm. The worst they suffered was the direct deaths outside their gate. The fire inside did no real harm, or so the Taken reported. Grimy, Whisper grounded her carpet outside my headquarters, trundled inside, looking the worse for wear, but unharmed. "What started it?" she asked. The lieutenant explained. They're getting frightened, she said. Maybe desperate. Were they trying to scare you off or take you prisoner?
Definitely prisoner, I said. They hit us with some kind of sleepy spell before they came after us.
One Eye supported me with a nod.
Why were they unsuccessful?
One Eye broke the spell, turned it around on them. We killed three.
Ah, no wonder they were upset.
You brought one down with you.
I thought we could understand them better if I cut one up to see how he was made.
Whisper did one of her mental fades, communing with the mistress of us all. She returned.
A good idea, but Feather and I will do the cutting. Where is the corpse? I'll take it to Durtile now.
I indicated the body. It was in plain sight. She had two men carry it to her carpet.
I muttered, "Don't damn trust us to do anything anymore."
Whisper heard me. She did not comment.
Once the body was loaded, she told the lieutenant, "Begin your preliminary siege work immediately. A circumvallation. Limper will support you. It's likely the Dominator's creatures will try to break out or take prisoners, or both. Don't permit it. A dozen captives would allow them to open the pathway. You would find yourself facing the Dominator. He would not be kind."
No shit. The lieutenant is a tough guy's tough guy when it suits him. In those moments, not even the lady could intimidate him.
"Why don't you clear out, tend to your job, and let me tend to mine?"
His remarks didn't fit the moment, but he was fed up with Taken in general. He had been on the march with the Limper for months, and the Limper fancied himself a commander. He gave the lieutenant and captain both a bellyful. And maybe that was the source of the friction between the company and Taken. The captain had his limits too, though he was more diplomatic than the lieutenant. He would ignore orders that did not suit him. I went out to watch the circumvallation of the Black Castle. Drafts of laborers arrived from the Buskin, shovels over their shoulders and terror in their eyes. Our men put down their tools and assumed guardianship and supervisory roles. Occasionally, the Black Castle sputtered, making a feeble attempt to interfere, like a volcano muttering to itself after its energy has been spent. The locals sometimes scattered and had to be rounded up. We lost a lot of goodwill one earlier. A sheepish yet angry pawnbroker came looking for me, gravity accentuated by the afternoon sunlight. I eased away and went to meet him.
"What's the bad news?"
"That damned shed made a run for it in the confusion."
"Confusion?"
"The city went crazy when the Taken started sniping at the castle. We lost track of Shed. By the time Goblin found him, he was on a ship headed for Miadenville. I tried to keep it from pulling out, but they wouldn't stop. I shot them up, then grabbed a boat and went after them, but I couldn't catch up."
After cursing pawnbroker and stifling an urge to strangle him, I sat down to think. "What's the matter with him, Pawn? What's he afraid of?"
"Everything, Croker. His own shadow. I reckon he figured we were going to kill him. Goblin says it was more than that, but you know how he loves to complicate stuff."
"Like what?"
"Goblin says he wants to make a clean break with the old shed. Fear of us was the motivation he needed to get moving."
"Clean break?"
"You know, like from guilt about everything he did, and from reprisals by the Inquisitors. Bullock knows he was in on the catacombs raid. Bullock would jump on him as soon as he got back."
I stared down at the shadowed harbor. Ships were getting underway still. The waterfront looked naked. If outsiders kept running, we would become very unpopular. Juniper depended heavily on trade.
"You find Elmo. Tell him. Say I think you ought to go after Shed. Find Kingpin and those guys and bring them back. Check on Darling and Bullock while you're at it."
He looked like a man condemned, but did not protest. He had several screw-ups to his credit. Being separated from his comrades was a cheap penalty to pay.
"Right,"
he said, and hustled off. I returned to the task at hand. Disorganization resolved itself as the troops formed the locals into work crews. The earth was flying. First, a good deep trench so the creatures from the castle would have trouble getting out. Then a palisade behind that. One of the Taken remained airborne, circling high above, watching the castle. Wagons began coming up from the city, carrying timber and rubble. Down there, other work crews were demolishing buildings for materials. Though they were structures unfit for occupation and long overdue for replacement, they housed people who were not going to love us for destroying their homes. One Eye and a sergeant named Shaky took a large labor draft around the castle, down to the roughest slope, and began a mine designed to drop part of the castle wall down the steep slope. They did nothing to conceal their purpose. Wasn't much point trying. The things we faced had the power to knife through any subterfuge. Actually managing to breach the wall would be a tough job. It might take weeks, even with One Eye helping. The miners would have to cut through many yards of solid rock. The project was one of several feints the lieutenant would employ. Though the way he plans a siege, one day's feint can become another's main thrust. Drawing on a manpower pool like Juniper, he could exercise every option. I felt a certain pride watching the siege take shape. I have been with the company a long time. Never had we undertaken so ambitious a project. Never had we been given the wherewithal. I wandered around till I found the lieutenant. What's the plan here, anyway? Nobody ever told me anything. Just nail them down so they can't get out. Then the Taken will jump all over them. I grunted. Basic and simple. I expected it would get more complicated. The creatures inside would fight. I suspect the Dominator was lying restless, shaping a counterstroke. Must be hell to be buried alive, able to do nothing but wish and hope at minions far beyond direct control. Such impotence would destroy me in a matter of hours. I told the lieutenant about Shed's escape. He did not get excited. Shed meant little to him. He did not know about Raven and Darling. To him, Raven was a deserter and Darling his camp follower. Nothing special. I wanted him to know about Shed, so he would mention it to the captain. The captain might want to take action more vigorous than my recommendation to Elmo. I stayed with the lieutenant a while, he watching the work crews, I watching a wagon train come uphill. This one should be bringing supper. Getting damn tired of cold meals, I muttered. Tell you what you ought to do, Croaker. You ought to get married and settle down. Sure, I replied, more sarcastically than I felt. Right after you. No, really. This might be the place to do it. Set yourself up in practice, catering to the rich. That Duke's family, say. Then, when your girlfriend gets here, you pop the question and you're all set. Daggers of ice drove into my soul, twisting. I croaked. Girlfriend? He grinned. Sure. Nobody told you. She's coming out for the big show. Going to run it personally. Be your big chance. My big chance? But for what? He was talking about the lady, of course. It had been years, but still they rode me about some romantic stories I wrote before I actually met the lady. They always ride anybody about anything they know will get their goat. All part of the game, all part of the brotherhood. I bet the son of a bitch had been boiling with the news since first he heard it, waiting to spring it on me. The lady, coming to Juniper. I considered deserting for real, while there was a ship or two left to get away. Chapter 36 Juniper. Fireworks. The castle lulled us, let us think we could slam the door without a squawk. For 2 days the labor crews ripped at the north ridge, gouging out a good deep trench, getting up much of the needed stockade, hammering out a nice beginning of a mine. Then they let us in on their displeasure. It was a little bit chaotic and a whole lot hairy, and in retrospect it seems it may not have started as what it became. It was a moonless night, but labor crews were working by firelight, torchlight, lantern light. The lieutenant had wooden towers going up each 100 feet where the trench and palisade were complete, and nearby them small ballistae for mounting atop them. A waste of time, I thought. What value mundane siege equipment against minions of the Dominator? But the lieutenant was our siege specialist. He was determined to do things properly, by the numbers, even if the ballistae never were used. They had to be available. Sharp-eyed company members were in the towers nearing completion, trying to see into the castle. One detected movement at the gate. Instead of raising a fuss, he sent a message down. The lieutenant went up. He decided that someone had left the castle and slipped around to One-Eye's side. He had drums sounded, trumpets blown, and fire arrows shot into the air. The alarm wakened me. I rushed up to see what was happening. For a while, there was nothing to see. On the far slope, One-Eye and Shaky stood to arms. Their workers panicked. Many were killed or crippled, trying to flee across the brushy, rocky, steep slope. A minority had sense enough to stand fast. The castle folks wanted to make a quick strike and catch some of One-Eye's workers, drag them inside, and complete whatever rites were necessary to bring the Dominator through. Once they were discovered, their strategy shifted. The men in the towers yelled that more were coming out. The lieutenant ordered harassing fire. He had a couple of small trebuchets chuck balls of burning brush into the area near the gate, and he sent men to find Goblin and Silent, figuring they could do more than he to provide needed illumination. Goblin was down in the buskin. It would take him an hour to respond. I had no idea where Silent might be. I had not seen him, though he had been in Juniper a week. The lieutenant had signal fires lighted to warn watchers on Durtile's walls that we had a situation. The Taken above finally came down to investigate. It proved to be the Limper. His first act was to take a handful of javelins, do something to them, then cast them to earth from above. They became pillars of chartreuse light between trench and castle. On the far slope, One-Eye provided his own illumination by spinning spiderwebs of violet and hanging their corners on the breeze. They quickly betrayed the approach of half a dozen shapes in black. Arrows and javelins flew. The creatures suffered several casualties before they took exception. Light blazed, then faded into a shimmer which surrounded each. They attacked. Other shapes appeared atop the castle wall. They hurled objects downslope. The size of a man's head, they bounded toward the minehead. One-Eye did something to alter their course. Only one escaped him. It left a trail of unconscious soldiers and workers. The castle creatures had evidently planned for every possibility but One-Eye. They were able to give the Limper hell, but did nothing about One-Eye at all. He shielded his men and made them fight toe-to-toe when the castle creatures closed. Most of his men were killed, but they wiped out their attackers. By then, the castle creatures were mounting a sortie against the trench and wall, directly toward where I stood, watching. I recall being more puzzled than fearful. How many were there? Shed had given the impression the castle was practically untenanted, but a good 25 of them, attacking with wizardry backing them, made the trench and wall almost pointless. They came out the gate, and something came over the castle wall, vast and bladder-like. It hit the ground, bounded twice, mashed down on the trench and palisade, crushing one and filling the other. The sortie streaked for the opening. Those creatures could move. The Limper came down out of the night, shrieking with the fury of his descent, glowing ever more brightly as he dropped. The glow peeled off in flakes the size of maple seeds, which fluttered in his wake, spinning and twisting earthward, eating into whatever they contacted. Four or five attackers went down. The lieutenant launched a hasty counterattack, finished several of the injured, then had to retreat. Several of the creatures dragged fallen soldiers toward the castle. The others came on. Without a heroic bone in my body, I picked up my heels and headed across the slope. And a wise move that proved. The air crackled and sparked and opened like a window. Something poured through from somewhere else. The slope froze so cold and so fast, the air itself turned to ice. The air around me rushed into the affected area, and it too froze. The cold took most of the castle creatures, enveloping them in frost. A random javelin struck one. The creature shattered, turning to powder and small shards. Men hurled whatever missiles were available, destroying the others. The opening closed after only a few seconds. The relative warmth of the world sapped the bitter cold. Fogs boiled up, concealed the area for several minutes. When they cleared, no trace of the creatures could be found. Meantime, three untouched creatures raced down the road toward Juniper. Elmo and an entire platoon raged in pursuit. Above, the Limper passed the apex of a climb and descended for a strike upon the fortress as another band of creatures came out. They grabbed up whatever bodies they could and hurried back. Limper adjusted his descent and hit them. Half went down. The others dragged at least a dozen dead men inside. A pair of those flying balls came shrieking across from Durtile and impacted the castle wall, hurling up a shield of color. Another carpet dropped behind Limper. It released something which plunged into the black castle. There was a flash so brilliant it blinded people for miles around. I was facing away at the moment, but even so, 15 seconds passed before my vision recovered enough to show me the fortress afire. This was not the shifting fire we had seen earlier. This was more like a conflagration actually consuming the stuff of the fortress itself. Strange screams came from inside. They set chills crawling my spine. They were screams not of pain, but of rage. Creatures appeared on the battlements, flailing away with what looked like cats-o'-nine-tails, extinguishing the flames. Wherever the flames had burned, the fortress was visibly diminished. A steady stream of ball pears howled across the valley. I do not see that they contributed anything, yet I'm sure there was purpose behind them. A third carpet dropped while Limper and the other were climbing. This one trailed a cloud of dust. Wherever the dust touched, it had an effect like Limper's maple seeds, only generalized. Exposed castle creatures shrieked in agony. Several seemed to melt. The others abandoned the walls. Events proceeded in like fashion for quite a while, with the black castle appearing to get the worst of it. Yet they had gotten those bodies inside, and I suspected that meant trouble. Sometime during all this, Asa made a getaway. I was unaware of it, so was everyone else, till hours later, when Pawnbroker spotted him going into the Iron Lily. But Pawnbroker was a good distance away, and the Lily was doing a booming business despite the hour, with everyone who could gathered for drinks while watching the fury on the North Ridge. Pawnbroker lost him in the mob. I expect Asa spoke to Shed's sister-in-law and learned that he, too, had escaped. We never had time to interview her. Meantime, the lieutenant was getting things under control. He had the casualties cleared away from the break in the circumvallation. He moved ballistae into position to fire into any further breakout attempt. He had pit traps dug. He sent laborers around to replace those One Eye had lost. The Taken continued their harassment of the castle, though at a more leisurely pace. They had shot their best bolts early. The occasional pair of balls howled over from Durtile. I later learned that Silent was throwing them, having been taught by the Taken. The worst of it seemed over. Except for the three escapees Elmo was hunting, we had contained the thing. The Limper peeled off to join the hunt for the three. Whisper returned to Durtile to refurbish her store of nasty tricks. Feather patrolled above the castle, dipping down occasionally when its denizens came out to battle the last consuming flames. Relative peace had returned. Nobody rested, though. Bodies had been hauled inside. We all wondered if they had gleaned enough to bring the Dominator through. But they were up to something else in there. A group of creatures appeared on the wall, setting up a device pointing downslope. Feather dove. Bam! Smoke boiled around her, illuminated from within. She came out wobbling. Bam! And bam! Again. And thrice more still. And after the last, she could no longer hold it. She was a fire, a comet, arcing up, out, away, and down into the city.
A violent explosion occurred where she hit. In moments, a savage conflagration raged upon the waterfront. The fire spread swiftly among the tightly packed tenements. Whisper was out of Durtile and hitting the Black Castle in minutes, with the vicious dust that melted and the fire that burned the stuff of the fortress itself. There was an intensity to her flying that betrayed her anger over Feather's fall. The Limper, meantime, broke off hunting escapees to help fight the fire in the buskin. With his aid, it was controlled within hours. Without him, the entire district might have burned. Elmo got two of the fugitives. The third vanished utterly. When the hunt resumed with the help of the Taken, no trace could be found. Whisper maintained her attack till she exhausted her resources. That came well after sunrise. The fortress looked more like a giant hunk of slag than a castle, yet she had not overcome it. One Eye, when he came around seeking more tools, told me there was plenty of activity inside. Chapter 37 Juniper, the Calm. I caught a 2-hour nap. The lieutenant allowed half the troops and workers the same, then the other half. When I wakened, I found few changes, except that the captain had sent Pockets over to establish a field hospital. Pockets had been down in the buskin, trying to win friends with free medical attention. I looked in, found only a handful of patients and the situation under control, went on to check the siege work. The lieutenant had repaired the gap in the palisade and trench. He had extended both, intending to take them all the way around, despite the difficulty of the nether slope. New, heavier missile weapons were under construction. He was not content to rely upon the Taken to reduce the place. He did not trust them to do the necessary. Sometime during my brief sleep, drafts of Candy's prisoners came up. But the lieutenant did not permit the civilians to leave. He put them to gathering earth while he scoped out a site for building a ramp. I suggested, "You'd better get some sleep." "Need to ride herd," he said. He had a vision. His talent had gone unused for years. He wanted this. I suspect he found the Taken an irritation, despite the formidable nature of the Black Castle. "It's your show," I said. "But you won't be much good if they hit back and you're too exhausted to think straight." We were communicating on a level outside words. Weariness had us all fragmented and choppy, neither our thoughts nor actions nor speech moving logically or linearly. He nodded curtly. "You're right." He surveyed the slope. "Seems to be clicking. I'll go down to the hospital. Have somebody get me if something happens." The hospital tent was the nearest place out of the sun. It was a bright, clear, intense day, promising to be unseasonably warm. I looked forward to that. I was tired of shivering. "Will do." He was right about things running smoothly. They usually do once the men know what has to be done. From the viewpoint of the Limper, who again had the air patrol, the slope must have looked like an overturned anthill. 600 company troops were supervising the efforts of 10 times as many men from the city. The road uphill carried so much traffic, it was being destroyed. Despite the night's excitement and their lack of sleep, I found the men in excellent spirits. They had been on the march so long, doing nothing else, that they had developed a big store of violent energy. It was pouring out now. They worked with an eagerness which infected the locals. Those seemed pleased to participate in a task which required the concerted efforts of thousands. Some of the more thoughtful mentioned that Juniper had mounted no major communal effort in generations. One man suggested that that was why the city had gone to seed. He believed the Black Company and its attack on the Black Castle would be great medicine for a moribund body politic. That, however, was not a majority opinion. Candy's prisoners, especially, resented being used as a labor force. They represented a strong potential for trouble. I have been told I always look at the dark underbelly of tomorrow. Possibly. You're less likely to be disappointed that way.
The excitement I expected did not materialize for days. The castle creatures seemed to have pulled their hole in after them. We eased the pace slightly, ceased working as if everything had to be done before tomorrow. The lieutenant completed the circumvallation, including the back slope, looping around One Eye's excavation. He then broke the front wall and began building his ramp. He did not use many mantlets, for he designed it to provide its own shielding. It rose steeply at our end, with steps constructed of stone from demolished buildings. The work crews downtown were now pulling down structures ruined in the fire following Feather's crash. There were more materials than could be used in the siege. Candy's outfit was salvaging the best to use in new housing planned for the cleared sites. The ramp would rise till it overtopped the castle by 20 feet, then it would descend to the wall. The work went faster than I expected. So did One Eye's project. He found a combination of spells which turned stone soft enough to be worked easily. He soon reached a point beneath the castle. Then he ran into the material that looked like obsidian, and could go no farther, so he started spreading out. The captain himself came over. I had been wondering what he was doing. I asked.
"Finding ways to keep people busy," he said.
He shambled around erratically. If we did not pay attention, we found ourselves wandering off after he made some sudden turn and went to inspect something apparently trivial.
"Damned Whisper is turning me into a military governor."
"What, Croker?"
"I'm the analyst, remember? Gotta get this all down somewhere."
He frowned, eyeballed a barrel of water set aside for animals. Water was a problem. A lot had to be hauled to augment the little we caught during the occasional shower.
"She has me running the city, doing what the Duke and City Fathers should."
He kicked a rock and said nothing more till it stopped rolling.
"Guess I'm coping. Isn't anybody in town who isn't working. Aren't getting paid anything but keep, but they're working. Even got people lined up with projects they want done, as long as we're making people work. The custodians are driving me crazy. Can't tell them all their cleanups may be pointless."
I caught an odd note in that. It underscored a feeling I'd had already, that he was depressed about what was happening.
"Why's that?"
He glanced around. No natives were within earshot.
"Just a guess, mind. Nobody's put it in words, but I think the lady plans to loot the catacombs."
"People aren't going to like that."
"I know. You know. I know. Even Whisper and Limper know. But we don't give the orders. There's talk about how the lady is short of money."
In all the years we'd been in her service, we'd never missed a payday. The lady played that straight. The troops got paid, be they mercenaries or regulars. I suspected the various outfits could tolerate a few delays. It's almost a tradition for commanders to screw their troops occasionally. Most of us didn't care much about money anyway. We tended toward inexpensive and limited tastes. I suppose attitudes would shift if we had to do without, though.
"Too many men under arms on too many frontiers," the captain mused. "Too much expansion, too fast, for too long. The Empire can't take the strain. The effort in the Barrowland ate up her reserves, and it's still going. If she whips the Dominator, look for things to change."
"Maybe we made a mistake, eh?"
"Made a lot. Which one are you talking about?"
"Coming north, over the Sea of Torments?"
"Yes, I've known that for years."
"And?"
"And we can't get out. Not yet. Someday, maybe, when our orders take us back to the Jewel Cities, or somewhere where we could leave the Empire and still find ourselves in a civilized country."
There was an almost bottomless yearning in his voice.
"The longer I spend in the north, the less I want to end my days here, Croker. Put that in your annals."
I had him talking, a rare occurrence. I merely grunted, hoping he would continue filling the silence. He did.
"We're running with the darkness, Croker.
I know that don't make no never mind, really. Logically,
We're the Black Company. We're not good or evil. We're just soldiers with swords for sale. But I'm tired of having our work turned to wicked ends. If this looting thing happens, I may step aside. Raven had the right idea back at Charm. He got the hell out.
I then set forth a notion that had been in the back of my mind for years, one I'd never taken seriously, knowing it quixotic.
That doesn't contribute anything, Captain. We also have the option of going the other way.
Eh? He came back from whatever faraway place ruled him and really looked at me.
Don't be silly, Croker. That's a fool's game. The lady squashes anybody who tries.
He ground a heel into the earth. Like a bug.
Yeah. It was a silly idea, on several levels, not the least of which was that the other side could not afford us.
I could not picture us in the rebel role anyway. The majority of rebels were idiots, fools, or ambitious types hoping to grab a chunk of what the lady had. Darling was the outstanding exception, and she was more symbol than substance, and a secret symbol at that.
8 years since the comet was in the sky, the captain said. You know the legends. She won't fall till the great comet is up there. You want to try surviving 29 years on the run from the Taken?
No, Croker. Even if our hearts were with the White Rose, we couldn't make that choice. That's suicide.
Getting out of the Empire is the way.
She'd come after us.
Why? Why shouldn't she be satisfied with what she's had of us these 10 years? We're no threat to her.
But we were. We very much were, if only because we knew of the existence of the reincarnation of the White Rose. And I was sure that once we left the Empire, either Silent or I would spill that secret. Of course, the lady did not know that we knew.
This chatter is an exercise in futility, the captain said. I'd rather not talk about it.
As you wish. Tell me what we're going to do here.
The lady is coming in tonight. Whisper says we'll begin the assault as soon as the auspices are right.
I glanced at the Black Castle.
No, he said. It won't be easy. It may not be possible, even with the lady helping.
If she asks about me, tell her I'm dead, or something, I said. That won a smile.
But Croker, she's your...
Raven, I snapped. I know things about him that could get us all killed. So does Silent. Get him out of Durtile before she gets here. Neither one of us dares face the Eye.
For that, neither do I. Because I know you know something. We're going to have to take our chances, Croker.
Right. So don't put notions into her head.
I expect she's forgotten you long since, Croker. You're just another soldier.
Chapter 38 Juniper, the Storm. The lady hadn't forgotten me, not even a little. Shortly after midnight, a grim Elmo rousted me out.
Whisper is here. Wants you, Croker.
Eh? I hadn't done anything to arouse her ire. Not for weeks.
They want you over at Durtile. She wants you. Whisper is here to take you back.
Ever seen a grown man faint? I haven't. But I came close. I may have come close to having a stroke, too. My blood pressure must have soared. For 2 minutes I was vertiginous and unable to think. My heart pounded. My guts ached with fear. I knew she was going to drag me in for a session with the Eye, which sees every secret buried in a man's mind. And yet I could do nothing to evade her. It was too late to run. I wished I had been aboard the ship to Meadenville with Pawnbroker. Like a man walking to the gallows, I went out to Whisper's carpet, settled myself behind her, and dwindled into my thoughts as we rose and rushed through the chill night toward Durtile. As we passed over the port, Whisper called back.
"You must have made quite an impression back when, physician. You were the first person she asked about when she got here."
I found enough presence of mind to ask, "Why?"
I suspect because she wants her story recorded again, as she did during the battle at Charm.
I looked up from my hands, startled.
How had she known that? I'd always pictured the Taken and Lady as uncommunicative among themselves.
What she said was true. During the battle at Charm, the Lady had dragged me around with her so the events of the day would be recorded as they happened, and she did not demand special treatment. In fact, she insisted I write stuff as I saw it. There was just the faintest whiff of a hint that she expected to be toppled sometime, and once she was, expected maltreatment by historians. She wanted a neutral record to exist. I hadn't thought about that for years. It was one of the more curious anomalies I'd noted about her. She did not care what people thought of her, but was frightened that the record would be bastardized to suit someone else's ends. The tiniest spark of hope rose from that. Maybe she did want a record kept. Maybe I could get through this, if I could remain nimble enough to avoid the eye. The captain met us when we landed on Durtile's northern wall. A glance at the carpets told me all the Taken were on hand. Even Journey, who I had expected to remain in the Barrowland. But Journey would have a grudge to soothe. Feather had been his wife. A second glance told me the captain was silently apologetic about my situation, that there were things he wanted to say, but dared not. I fed him a tiny shrug, hoped we would get a moment later. We did not. Whisper led me from the wall directly into the lady's presence. She hadn't changed an iota since I had seen her last. The rest of us had aged terribly, but she remained 20 forever, radiantly gorgeous with stunning black hair and eyes into which a man could fall and die. She was, as always, such a focal point of glamour that she could not be physically described. A detailed description would be pointless anyway, as what I saw was not the true lady. The lady who looked like that hadn't existed for 4 centuries, if ever. She rose and came to greet me, a hand extended. I could not tear my eyes away. She rewarded me with a slightly mocking smile I recalled so well, as though we shared a secret. I touched her hand lightly and was astonished to find it warm. Away from her, when she vanished from mind except as a distant object of dread, like an earthquake, I could think of her only as cold, dead, and deadly. More on the order of a lethal zombie than a living, breathing, even possibly vulnerable person. She smiled a second time and invited me to take a seat. I did so, feeling grotesquely out of place amidst a company which included all but one of the great evils of the world. And the Dominator was there in spirit, casting his cold shadow. I was not there to contribute, that became obvious. The captain and lieutenant did the talking for the company. The Duke and Custodian Hagedorn were there too, but contributed little more than I. The Taken carried the discussion, questioning the captain and lieutenant. Only once was I addressed, and that by the captain, who inquired as to my readiness to treat casualties from the fighting. The meeting had only one point so far as I was concerned. The assault was set for dawn, day after the one coming up. It would continue till the Black Castle was destroyed, or we lost our capacity to attack. "The place is a hole in the bottom of the Ship of Empire," the lady said. "It has to be plugged, or we all drown." She entertained no protests from the Duke or Hagedorn, both of whom regretted asking her for help. The Duke was now impotent within his own domain, and Hagedorn little better. The custodian suspected he would be out of work entirely once the threat of the castle ended. Few of the company and none of the Taken had been at any pains to conceal their disdain for Juniper's odd religion. Having spent a lot of time among the people, I could say they took it only as seriously as the inquisitors, custodians, and a few fanatics made them. I hoped she went slow if she intended changes, though. Like so slow, the company would be headed elsewhere before she started. You mess with people's religion, and you mess with fire. Even people who don't much give a damn.
Religion is something that gets hammered in early and never really goes away, and has powers to move which go beyond anything rational. Morning after the day coming up. Total war. All-out effort to eradicate the Black Castle. Every resource of the Lady, Taken, Company, and Juniper to be bent to that end for as long as it took. Morning after the day coming up. But it did not work that way. Nobody told the Dominator he was supposed to wait. He got in the first strike 6 hours before jump-off, while most of the troops and all the civilian laborers were asleep, while the only Taken patrolling was Journey, who was the least of the Lady's henchmen. It began when one of those bladder-like things bounced over the wall and filled the gap remaining in the lieutenant's ramp. At least 100 creatures stormed out of the castle and crossed. Journey was alert. He had sensed a strangeness in the castle and was watching for trouble. He came down fast and drenched those attackers with the dust that melted. Bam, 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 bam. The castle hit him the way it had hit his one-time wife. He fishtailed through the air, evading the worst, but caught the edge of every crack and went down smoldering, his carpet destroyed. The banging wakened me. It wakened the entire camp, for it started the same time as the alarms and drowned them entirely. I charged out of the hospital, saw the castle creatures boiling down the steps of the lieutenant's ramp. Journey hadn't stopped more than a handful. They were enveloped by that protective glow One Eye had encountered once before. They spread out, sprinting through a storm of missiles from the men who had the watch. A few more fell, but not many. They began extinguishing lights, I suppose because their eyes were more suited to darkness than ours. Men were running everywhere, dragging their clothing on as they rushed toward or away from the enemy. The laborers panicked and greatly hampered the company's response. Many were killed by our men, vexed at finding them in the way. The lieutenant charged through the chaos, bellowing orders. First, he got his batteries of heavy weapons manned and trained on the steps. He sent messengers everywhere, ordering every ballista, catapult, mangonel, and trebuchet move to a position where it could fire on the ramp. That baffled me only till the first castle creature headed home with a body under each arm. A storm of missiles hit him, tore the bodies to shreds, battered him to a pulp, and nearly buried him. The lieutenant had trebuchets throw canisters of oil, which smashed on the steps and caught fire when flaming balls were thrown after them. He kept the oil and fire flying. The castle creatures would not run through the flames. So much for my thinking the lieutenant was wasting time building useless engines. The man knew his job. He was good. His preparation and quick response were more valuable than anything done by the Lady or Taken that night. He held the line in the critical minutes. A mad battle began the moment the creatures realized they were cut off. They promptly attacked, trying to reach the engines. The lieutenant signaled his under-officers and brought the bulk of his available manpower to bear. He had to. Those creatures were more than a match for any two soldiers, and they benefited from the protective glow as well. Here, there, a brave citizen of Juniper grabbed a fallen weapon and jumped into the struggle. Most paid the ultimate price, but their sacrifice helped keep the enemy away from the engines. It was obvious to everyone that if the creatures escaped with many bodies, our cause was lost. We'd soon be face to face with their master himself. The ball pairs began coming over from Durtile, splashing the night with terrible color. Then Taken dropped from the night, Limper and Whisper each depositing an egg which hatched the fire that fed on the stuff of the castle. Limper dodged several attacks from the castle, swooped around, brought his carpet to ground near my hospital, where we were swamped by customers already. I had to retreat there to do the job for which I was paid. I kept the uphill tent flaps open so I could watch. Limper left his aerial steed, marched uphill with a long black sword that glimmered evilly in the light from the burning fortress. He radiated a glow not unlike that protecting the castle creatures. His, however, was far more puissant than theirs, as he demonstrated when he pushed through the press and attacked them. Their weapons could not reach him. His sliced through them as though they were made of lard. The creatures by that time had slaughtered at least 500 men. The majority were workers, but the company had taken a terrible beating, too. And that beating went on even after the limper turned the tide, for he could engage but one creature at a time. Our people strove to keep the enemy contained till the limper could get to them. They responded by trying to swamp the limper, which they managed with some success, 15 or 20 piling on and keeping him pinned by sheer body weight. The lieutenant shifted the fire of the engines temporarily, pounded that seething pile till it broke up, and the limper regained his feet. That ploy having failed, a band of the creatures clotted up and tried to break out to the west. I don't know whether they planned to escape entirely or meant to swing around and strike from behind. The dozen who made it through encountered Whisper and a heavy fall of the melting dust. The dust killed a half-dozen workers for every castle creature, but it stopped the charge. Only 5 creatures survived it. Those 5 immediately encountered the portal from elsewhere that expelled the cold breath of the infinite. They all perished. Whisper, meantime, was scrambling for altitude. A drumroll procession of bangs pursued her up the sky. She was a better flyer than Journey, but even so could not evade injury. Down she came, eventually touching down beyond the fortress. Within the castle itself, creatures were out with the cats o' nine tails, extinguishing the fires started by Whisper and the Limper. The structure had begun to look pathetic, so much of its substance had been consumed. Gone was the dark, dreadful grace of weeks before. It was one big, dark, glassy lump, and it seemed impossible that creatures could survive inside it. Yet they did, and continued the fight. A handful came out on the ramp and did something which gnawed black chunks out of the lieutenant's conflagration. All the creatures on the slope ran for home, not a one forgetting to scoop up at least one body. The ice door opened again, its breath dumping on the steps. The fires died instantly. A score of the creatures died too, hammered to powder by the lieutenant's missiles. The things inside took a tack I had anticipated fearfully since I had seen Feather crash. They turned their booming spell on the slope. If it wasn't the thing that had pursued the lieutenant, Elmo, One Eye, and me that day, it was a close cousin. There wasn't much flash or smoke when they used it on the slope, but huge holes appeared, often with bloody pulp smashed into their bottoms. All this happened so swiftly, so dramatically, that nobody really had time to think. I don't doubt that even the company would have run had events been stretched out enough to allow thinking time. As it was, in their confusion, the men had a chance only to pursue roles for which they had been preparing since reaching Juniper. They stood their ground, and, too often, died. The limper scampered around the slope like an insane chicken, cackling and hunting creatures who hadn't died on the steps. There were a score of those, most surrounded by angry soldiers. Some of the creatures were slain by their own side, for those knots made tempting targets for the booming spell. Teams of creatures appeared on the ramparts, assembling devices like the one we'd seen them try to use before. This time there was no taken above to drop and give them hell. Not till Fool Journey came rushing past the hospital, looking cruelly battered, and stole the limper's carpet. It had been my notion that one taken could not use another's vehicle. Not so, apparently, for Journey got the thing aloft and dove upon the castle again, dumping dust and another fire egg. The castle knocked him down again, and despite the tumult, I heard the limper howling and cursing him for it. Ever see how a child draws a straight line? None too straight. Something as shaky as a child's hand scribbled a wobbly line from Durtile to the Black Castle. It hung against the night like an improbable clothesline, wriggling, of indeterminate color, iridescent. Its tip threw sparks off the obsidian material, like the meeting of flint and steel magnified 10,000 times, generating an actinic glare too intense to view directly. The entire slope was bathed in wild, bluish light. I put aside my instruments and stepped out to better observe, for down in my gut I knew the lady anchored the nether end of that scrawl, having entered the lists for the first time. She was the big one, the most powerful, and if the castle could be reduced at all, hers was the might that would do it. The lieutenant must have been distracted. For a few seconds his fires dwindled. A half-dozen castle creatures went up the steps, dragging two and three corpses apiece. A rush of their compatriots came out to meet the limper, who was in hot pursuit. My guess is they got 12 bodies inside. Some might not have lost the spark of life entirely. Chunks flew from the castle where the lady's line touched, each blazing with that brilliant light. Thin cracks, in crimson, appeared against the black, spreading slowly. The creatures assembling the devices retreated, were replaced by others trying to lessen the effects of the lady's attack. They had no luck. Several were knocked down by missiles from the lieutenant's batteries. The limper reached the head of the stairs and stood limned against the glow of a section of castle still afire, sword raised high. A giant runt, if you will pardon the contradiction. He is a tiny thing, yet stood huge at that moment. He bellowed, "Follow me!" and charged down the ramp. To my everlasting amazement, men followed him. Hundreds of men. I saw Elmo and the remnants of his company go roaring up, across, and disappear. Even scores of gutsy citizens decided to take part. Part of the story of Marin Shed had come out recently, without names or such, but with heavy emphasis on how much wealth he and Raven had garnered. Obviously, the story had been planted against this moment, when a storm of manpower would be needed to subdue the castle. In ensuing minutes, the call of wealth led many a man from the buskin up those steps. Down on the far side of the castle, Whisper reached One Eye's camp. One Eye and his men, of course, had stood to arms, but had taken part in nothing yet. His mine operation had stalled once he was certain there was no way to get around or to breach the substance of the castle. Whisper brought one of those eggs of fire, planted it against the obsidian exposed by One Eye's mine. She set it off and let it gnaw at the fortress's underbelly. That, I learned later, had been in the plan for some time. She had done some fancy flying to bring her crippled carpet down near One Eye so she could carry it out. Seeing the men pour into the castle, seeing the walls abandoned and being broken up by the lady, seeing fires burning unchecked, I decided the battle was ours, and was all over but the crying. I went back into the hospital and resumed cutting and stitching, setting, and just plain shaking my head over men for whom there was nothing I could do. I wished One Eye weren't on the far side of the ridge. He'd always been my principal assistant, and I missed him. While I could not denigrate Pocket's skill, he did not have One Eye's talent. Often there was a man beyond my help who could have been saved with a little magic. A whoop and howl told me Journey was back, home from his latest crash and rushing his enemies once more. And not far behind him came those elements of the company which had been stationed in the buskin. The lieutenant met Candy and prevented him from rushing over the ramp. Instead, he manned the perimeter and began rounding up those laborers who could be found still close to the action. He started putting things back together. The BAM weapon had continued pounding away all along. Now it began to falter. The lieutenant loudly cursed the fact that there were no carpets to drop fire eggs. There was one. The lady's. And I was sure she knew the situation, but she did not abandon her rope of iridescent light. She must have felt it to be more important. Down in the mine, the fire gnawed through the bottom of the fortress. A hole slowly expanded. One Eye says there is very little heat associated with those flames. The moment Whisper considered it opportune, she led his force into the fortress. One Eye says he really considered going, but had a bad feeling about it. He watched the mob charge in, workers and all, then hiked around to our side. He joined me in the hospital and updated me as he worked. Moments after he arrived, the backside of the castle collapsed. The whole earth rumbled. A long roar rolled down the 1,000 feet of the back slope. Very dramatic, but to little effect. The castle creatures were not inconvenienced at all. Parts of the forewall were falling, too, broken by the lady's incessant attack. Company members continued to arrive, accompanied by frightened formations of the Duke's men and even some custodians rigged out as soldiers. The lieutenant fed them into his lines. He allowed no one else to enter the castle. Strange lights and fires, fell howls and noises, and terrible, terrible odors came out of that place. I don't know what happened in there. Maybe I never will. I gather that hardly anyone came back. A strange, deep-throated, almost inaudible moaning began. It had me shuddering before I noted it consciously. It climbed in pitch with extreme deliberation, in volume much more rapidly. Soon it shook the whole ridge. It came from everywhere at once. After a while, it seemed to have meaning, like speech, incredibly slowed. I could detect a rhythm, like words stretched over minutes. One thought alone. The Dominator. He was coming through. For an instant I thought I could interpret the words, "Ardath, you bitch." But that went away, chased by fear. Goblin appeared at the hospital, looked us over, and seemed relieved to find One Eye there. He said nothing, and I got no chance to ask what he had been up to recently. He returned to the night, parting with a wave. Silent appeared a few minutes later, looking grim. Silent, my partner in guilty knowledge, whom I had not seen in more than a year, whom I had missed during my visit to Durtile. He looked taller, leaner, and bleaker than ever. He nodded, began talking rapidly in deaf speech. "There is a ship on the waterfront flying a red banner. Go there immediately." "What?" "Go to the ship with the red banner immediately. Stop only to inform others of the old company. These are orders from the captain. They are not to be disobeyed." One Eye. "I caught it, Croker," he said. "What the hell, hey, Silent?" Silent signed. "There will be trouble with the Taken. This ship will sail to Miadenville, where loose ends must be tied off. Those who know too much must disappear. Come, we just gather the old brothers and go." There weren't many old brothers around. One Eye and I hurried around telling everyone we could find, and in 15 minutes a crowd of us were headed toward the Port River Bridge, one as baffled as another. I kept looking back. Elmo was inside the castle. Elmo, who was my best friend. Elmo, who might be taken by the Taken. Chapter 39. On the Run. 96 men reported aboard, as ordered. A dozen were men for whom the order had not been meant, but who could not be sent away. Missing were 100 brothers from the old days before we crossed the Sea of Torments. Some had died on the slopes. Some were inside the castle. Some we hadn't been able to find. But none of the missing were men who had dangerous knowledge, except Elmo and the captain. I was there. Silent, One Eye, and Goblin were there. The lieutenant was there, more baffled than anyone else. Candy, Otto, Hagop, the list goes on and on. They were all there. But Elmo wasn't, and the old man wasn't, and there was a threat of mutiny when Silent passed the word to put out without them. "Orders," was all he would say, and that in the finger speech many of the men could not follow, though we had been using it for years. It was a legacy Darling had left the company, a mode of communication useful on the hunt or battlefield. The moment the ship was underway, Silent produced a sealed letter marked with the captain's sign. Silent took the officers present into the cabin of the ship's master. He instructed me to read the letter aloud. "You were right about the Taken, Croker," I read. They do suspect, and they do intend to move against the company. I have done what I can to circumvent them by hiring a ship to take my most endangered brothers to safety. I will not be able to join you, as my absence would alert the Taken. Do not dawdle. I do not expect to last long once they discover your desertion. As you and Goblin can attest, no man hides from the lady's eye. I do not know that flight will present much hope. They will hunt you, for they will get things from me unless I am quick on my feet. I know enough to set them on the trail. The lieutenant interrupted. What the hell is going on? He knew there were secrets some of us shared to which he was not privy. I'd say we're past playing games and keeping things from each other. I looked at Silent, said, I think we should tell everybody, just so there's a chance the knowledge won't die. Silent nodded. Lieutenant, Darling is the White Rose.
What?
But, yes, Silent and I have known since the battle at Charm. Raven figured it out first. That's why he deserted. He wanted to get her as far from the lady as he could. You know how much he loved her. I think a few others guessed, too. The announcement did not cause a stir. Only the lieutenant was surprised. The others had suspected. The captain's letter hadn't much more to say. Farewells. A suggestion we elect the lieutenant to replace him. And a final private word to me. Circumstances seem to have dictated a shift to the option you mentioned, Croker. Unless you can outrun the Taken back to the south. I could hear the sardonic chuckle that went with the comment. One-Eye wanted to know what had become of the company treasure chest. Way, way back in our service to the lady, we had grabbed off a fortune in coin and gems. It had traveled with us through the years, through good times and bad, our final secret insurance against tomorrow. Silent told us it was up in Durtile with the old man. There had been no chance to get it out. One-Eye broke down and wept. That chest meant more to him than all vicissitudes, past, present, or promised. Goblin got down on him. Sparks flew. The lieutenant was about to take a hand when someone shoved through the door. You guys better come topside and see this. He was gone before we could find out what he meant. We hurried up to the main deck. The ship was a good 2 miles down the port, riding the current and tide, but the glow from the Black Castle illuminated both us and Juniper as brightly as a cloudy day. The castle formed the base of a fountain of fire, reaching miles into the sky. A vast figure twisted in the flames. Its lips moved. Long, slow words echoed down the port.
Ardath! You bitch!
I had been right. The figure's hand rose slowly, lazily, pointed toward Durtile.
They got enough bodies inside, Goblin squeaked. The old bastard is coming through.
The men watched in rapt awe. So did I, able only to think we were lucky to escape in time. At the moment, I felt nothing for the men we had left behind. I could think only of myself. There, somebody said softly. Oh, look there. A ball of light formed on Durtile's wall. It swelled rapidly, shedding many colors. It was gorgeous, like a giant moon of stained glass, rotating slowly. It was at least 200 yards in diameter when it separated from Durtile and drifted toward the Black Castle. The figure there reached, grabbed at the globe, was unable to affect it. I giggled.
What's so damn funny? The lieutenant demanded.
Just thinking how the people of Juniper must feel, looking up at that. They've never seen sorcery. The stained glass ball rolled over and over. For a moment it presented a side I hadn't noticed before. A side that was a face. The lady's face. Those great glassy eyes stared right into me, hurting. Without thinking, I said, I didn't betray you. You betrayed me. Swear to the gods there was some form of communication. Something in the eyes said she had heard and was pained by the accusation. Then the face rolled away, and I did not see it again. The globe drifted into the fountain of fire. It vanished there. I thought I heard the long, slow voice say,
"I have you, Ardath."
"There! Look there!" the same man said, and we turned to Durtile. And upon the wall, where the lady had begun moving toward her husband, there was another light. For a while I could not make out what was happening. It came our way, faltering, rising, falling. "That's the lady's carpet," Silent signed. "I have seen it before." But who? There was no one left who could fly one. The Taken were all over at the Black Castle. The thing began to move faster, converting rickety up and down into ever-increasing velocity. It came our way, faster and faster, dropping lower and lower.